Well, Jerry Apps, a Madison historian, writer, professor emeritus at the UW-Madison, is the author of more than 40 books, including the one we'll be talking with him about today. It's called Horse-Drawn Days, A Century of Farming with Horses. It's published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. Really glad to have Jerry back. He received the Major Achievement Award from the Council for Wisconsin Writers and the Wisconsin Library Association's Notable Wisconsin Writer Award, among other things. And we always have a good time when he comes by. And so I'm really pleased to have him back to talk about this new book. I've had a chance to read through it. I haven't read the whole book yet, but I've gotten through a lot of it, and I'm really enjoying it. And I think you will, too. Kind of fun to reminisce and think back to those days when the horses did everything on the farms before the time of tractors. And Jerry talks about that in his book. Lots of great photography as well. Give us a call. Maybe you've got a remembrance about horses or questions about them. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And we'd love to hear from you. And Jerry, welcome back.
Always good to be here, Larry.
Oh, it's great to have you back. You know, this is a great story you've got here.
Well, it is. And I was surprised that no one had written it before. There are a number of books around on horses and the history of horses. And there are a few books around on the history of farm machinery. But nobody put the two together with a story of how it all worked.
Yeah, and it's. I mean, horses were really essential.
Well, they were essential not only on the farms, but they were essential everywhere.
Yeah,
they got us to where we're going. They did the work. They hauled the beer wagons. They hauled the circus wagons. They did it all. They really did.
And it's frankly, it's not that far back.
It's not because I grew up driving horses, and I'm getting on, but I'm not that far on.
Oh, man. I guess, when did you learn to drive a team?
Probably, well, when you're a farm kid, you start doing things when you're very young. I suppose 8 or 9 years old, I was driving horses. The first kind of horse driving experience a farm kid tended to have, and I grew up making loose hay, and some people will remember that, and that's driving a horse on a hay fork rope while the load of hay was being unloaded. That was the first job. And then you sort of graduated up to doing things like cultivating and so on. Driving a team on a threshing crew, I did that when I was probably 14.
These days, you know, probably in this day and age, they'd say, well, you can't do that.
Oh, people would have an absolute bird if they saw a kid doing what we were doing.
Well, talk about how your book's organized, because I think it's really cool. It contains so much wonderful photography and
Just a little background. The Historical Society has in their archives all of the McCormick papers. Cyrus McCormick, of course, was the inventor of the Reaper. He went on to combine his activities with Deering and then eventually formed the International Harvester Corporation, operating out of Chicago. All of those papers found their way to here to Madison and to the Historical Society, and I had access to all of that, which meant I could look at the advertising material. We have in the book a number of illustrations from this advertising material. It was absolutely wonderful because that was the day when there wasn't a lot of colorful material around, and the lithographs, the fancy covers on all of this advertising material were just absolutely outstanding. The artwork was superb. And that's the kind of artwork that's sprinkled all through the book. In addition to that, my son Steve, who was a professional photographer, we spent a fair amount of time running around and a lot of it at Stonefield Village in southwestern Wisconsin, one of the Wisconsin Historic Society sites, photographing old horse-drawn farm machinery. They have probably the finest collection of old farm horse-drawn machinery that you'll find anywhere in the Midwest. So we spend a lot of time photographing that, and all of that's in here. But in terms of organizing the book, about half of it, roughly, is on the history of draft horses themselves, And then the rest of it deals with the history of horse-drawn machinery.
Yeah.
All of it I weave together in a story of what farm life was like over the course of a year in the Midwest, from what we did in the early spring to what we did in the wintertime.
Yeah.
I had a terrible time trying to figure out how to organize this thing, and I had a problem with all my books. But that's how I finally that's finally the organizational scheme I came up with.
I think it was a good scheme. And you also, you didn't mention many of the old photos that you
Yeah, had. There are a lot of historic photos that go way back into the 1800s. One of the interesting things, Larry, once photography was invented just before the Civil War, photographers, professional photographers, go around from farm to farm taking pictures of the farm families. And invariably, a farmer would not have his family photographed in front of their farmhouse, but it was in front of their barn. And not only was the barn there, but the horses were there.
Yeah.
And a favorite cow sometimes, but always the horses, the farm dog. And in some of the pictures, there's McCormick's Reaper proudly displayed. So farmers were very proud of their horses and their machinery. Of course, their families, but the farmhouse meant not very much.
Caroline in Green Bay has a question or comment here. Let's turn there. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. It's just a comment about the nostalgia. You know, these days most of us live in the suburbs, but many of us have families that used to live on farms or old people. And I live in the suburbs myself, and my son wanted to plant corn, and the only place we could plant it was in our front yard, and my husband had a fit. He said, the neighbors are going to hate it. But the truth is, everyone is so nostalgic about their old farm past that people come by and they love our corn in the front yard. And I just thought it's not horses, but people really do feel the connection to the farms, families that they have come from.
That's a wonderful story. And you could go a step further. You could rent a horse and cultivate the corn in your front yard.
Oh, boy.
That would bring the neighbors out.
Thanks, Carolyn.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's a great story. Oh, boy. Vern in Fenimore. Let's go to you now. Hi, Vern.
Good morning. When I was a kid in the 40s, my dad always raised a colt each spring. And a man came around driving a stud horse hooked to a two-wheel cart. And he came one spring just before dinner time. And my dad says, well, we'll put your horse in the barn and you can have lunch with us. Our barn was like all of them with double Dutch doors. And our workhorses went in and out all the time. But that stud horse was too big to fit, too tall, as I recall.
That's an interesting story. And your comment about a stud horse is a male horse, a stallion, for those who wonder what in the world we're talking about. It was common for people who owned male horses, stallions, to go from farm to farm, just as you describe. And very often the owner of the stallion would stay overnight, would eat with the people. I even have a couple of stories in my book about how a given farmer had several stallions that he sent out in different directions. And he hired men who were sort of down on their luck and were out of work to do this, to go from farm to farm. So that's an interesting part of the history of draft horses. Most farmers did not have stallions on the premises. It was too dangerous. They were not very dependable, and in terms of their attitudes, so they tended not to have them there.
Thanks, Vern. That's a great story. I appreciate it. Eva in Campbellsport, it's your turn. Hi, Eva.
Hi. I guess I was going to say we just love the book, and one of the neatest things was there's two pictures of my husband in there, and we didn't even know about it.
Well.
Yeah, so he was
What page is the picture on, and what are your names?
Actually, his name isn't in there. It's at the Wade House.
Uh-huh.
And it's page 12 and page 56.
Well, gee, that's wonderful. You know, that happens all the time. We find these photos in the Historical Society archives, And the people often are not identified. So it's just great fun when somebody like yourself says, hey, look who's in that picture.
And it was just taken a couple of years ago.
I know. That's a contemporary photo. And it's
right.
A beautiful photo with the draft horses plowing. Does he volunteer at the Waite House?
Yep, he does a little of that. And, well, we use him at home, too.
Yeah, so he's having a grand time.
Oh, yes.
And so you're still using horses on the farm?
Yes.
Oh.
And the team that we see in this photo, then that's your team?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's...
And actually, we had lost one of those.
Oh.
So it makes it more sentimental when he sees
sure.
his boys hitched together.
Well, I'm so pleased to hear from you. That happens all the time with my books. But, well, thank you for calling
in. Yeah, thanks, Eva.
Okay.
Appreciate the call. Levi and Shorewood, your turn. Hi, Levi.
Hello. I was wondering if you had written at all about farm accidents. And the reason I'm curious is because my grandfather's brother was killed in an accident while he was riding a team of horses hauling fertilizer. And the horses shied for some reason, and he fell from the wagon and was dragged quite a distance to the neighboring schoolhouse. He was only 21 years old at the time.
Yeah.
I try to, in all of my books, I try to be very honest about what farm life was like. And we can wax nostalgic about driving horses, but at the same time, we must be aware that there were many, many accidents. And the runaway was a fairly common occurrence. And a runaway was a very dangerous thing to happen because you just did not know what was going to result. And thus I have a whole section in my book where I've interviewed people who knew about or had experienced runaways. So you make a very important point. Whenever we talk about something like farm life and the quote-unquote good old days, we need to also remind ourselves and everyone else that there was a downside to this.
And we can talk some more about that. Thanks, Levi, for calling. Jerry Apps, our guest today, as we talk with him about his latest book, Horse-Drawn Days, A Century of Farming with Horses. And it's published by
Wisconsin
Historical Society Press. Stay with us. Taking a look at farming with horses today here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, my guest Jerry Apps, author of Horse-Drawn Days, A Century of Farming with Horses. It's published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. And really great to have Jerry back and great to talk about this book, which is fascinating, a story of the horses that really were part of every family's life here in Wisconsin at one point. Certainly inviting your questions and comments as we move along, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's turn to Sally in Lancaster, who's been waiting a while. Sally, thank you for waiting.
Sure. Just a comment. I'm a veterinarian in southwest Wisconsin, and I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of Amish clients, and they still do all their work on the farm with the horses, and I really enjoy working with them and their draft horses and their buggy horses, and they're just as dependent on horses as anybody ever was for doing all the chores around the farm.
Yeah,
for those who live near Amish communities, and many in Wisconsin do. Driving through Amish country and watching the Amish with their teams out in the fields is essentially a very good way of taking us back 100 years, and not even that far, 50 years, and what farm life was like in much of Wisconsin. But, Larry, I'm also prompted to say something about, as we called them when I was a kid, horse doctors. and they, in those days, if you had a little bit of equipment, you declared yourself a horse doctor, and you and you tried to help farmers out with their problems. It was unbelievable. There was no, at least in our community in Washera County where I grew up, there wasn't any licensing. There weren't any degree veterinarians. Never heard of such a thing. They were clearly just horse doctors. Some of them were fairly good, and most of them were not. So that's an interesting little aside. I interviewed a veterinarian in Portage for my book, and we went into great length talking about the horse doctors. And he said that he was one of the very first veterinarians in that area who had a degree in veterinary science, veterinary medicine. So that's all kind of interesting and a very important part of the story, because horses indeed are animals, and they need to be cared for.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And you enjoy working with them, Sally?
Oh, they're just beautiful, the big Belgians and the Clydesdales and the Saddlebreds and the Morgans. Yeah, they're just beautiful.
How many times have you been kicked?
Oh, we don't want to go there. yeah, it happens. And my other comment is, those kids, those Amish kids, they use their horses and their ponies like English. Well, we're Englishmen to them, you know, like we Englishmen use the four wheelers and
of course
and the motorcycles. They just have a great time with their horses.
And of course, I grew up with horses. And that's what we did as kids. We would ride these 2,000-pound draft horses. I mean, we could barely sit on them. They were too wide.
Yeah, yeah.
Sally, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I appreciate that story and appreciate your work, actually, that you do as well. Let's take a call from Chuck in Washburn County next. Chuck, your turn. Hi.
Hi, how you doing today?
Great.
I've been in some third world countries. In particular, in the 1970s, I was in Afghanistan, and that was basically a horse-based society in that most all local things were moved by horses. And I really enjoyed it. It was like being in being in Illinois in the 1870s, maybe. But I felt it was a very, very nice environment created by that. So anyway, my question, though, involves, you know, last night the president went on talking about our need to get off the oil standard and such things as that. So I was wondering what your author might think about the future of the use of the horse in America in, like, 2050, 2100, and beyond. What he sees might come about.
Well, I'll comment on it, but my first quick comment is that as a historian, I have a terrible time figuring out what happened in the past, and to predict the future is dangerous ground. However, there are those who do predict that an alternative to, especially to foreign oil and to petroleum per se, that horses might just have a role that would be greater than they have today. We'll have to wait and see. This is a little bit of an aside, but one of the demonstrations we were doing on last Saturday at Stonefield Village was plowing with a team of horses. And the comment, and this relates to what you said earlier, a comment I heard again and again, it's so quiet. And it is.
Yeah.
The only noise was a little bit of jingle of a harness chain and a soft command from the driver when they got to the end and turned around. It was absolutely quiet. People could not understand that. We have become so used to loud noises, to diesel engines, and we've become accustomed to the smell of diesel fumes as well. And about the only fume that you might smell from a horse, a little horse sweat, and maybe now and again a little horse manure, but by and large, the smells were all of freshly turned soil. It was a wonderful experience.
Ah. Thanks, Chuck, for calling. Appreciate your call. Jay in Madison has a question or comment. Hi, Jay.
Good morning. I was enjoying the program. Thanks for having this on. I grew up in a small town in north central Iowa, and one of my fondest memories is of Bill Kopp, the local draft horse owner and operator, who went around town and plowed gardens for people who had big enough gardens to warrant that. And he would my parents would have him come and plow our garden every year and disc it and everything. And he would have a two-horse team, and he'd have a bucket hanging under his behind his seat. And as he plowed, he would occasionally, regularly, come across potatoes that were left over that we hadn't dug. And he would get off the seat of the plow and or just walk behind it when he was driving his horses. And he would pick up the potatoes, and sometimes they were so plentiful that he'd have to have them stop. And then he would say, "Get up a step, Daisy," and Daisy would take a step forward so he could get to the next potatoes. And she would just take a step forward, and then she'd stop.
Yeah, that's a
and
great.
And he'd just say, "Get up a step."
Yeah, that's
Daisy,
a great story.
And he'd move ahead a little more.
You guys weren't very good at digging potatoes, though, the way it sounds.
Yeah. another comment I have is that when I was 13, I got my first horse, and then I had horses and ponies. I bought and sold them, and trained them, and we played games around town playing tag and ditch'em on horseback, and we also did it in the county fairgrounds on with pony carts. Three or four of us had pony carts and two-wheel sulkies, and we would race around all the fairgrounds buildings trying to ditch each other and keep away from each other playing tag, and sometimes somebody would make a turn too fast and tip the cart over, and various events happened, but and some of us had, when we were on horseback or ponyback, whatever, we had them trained to lay down in the tall grass. Nobody could find us. But I have a single pony harness that's in fairly decent shape, as far as I know, in a box in my basement. But I would love to put it together with someone who would enjoy it and use it. And if there's some way that you can put them together with me, I'd be happy to give it to them.
Tell you what, Jay, what I will do is I'll put you on hold, and Rachel will take your phone number. And then if anybody wants to call in, anybody's interested in that harness, they can phone in, and we'll pass that phone number on to them. We'll do it that way.
And we appreciate your stories, too. Those are wonderful stories.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jay. I'll put you on hold here. Okay, we got him on hold. Let's go to Rachel in Wausau. Rachel, hello.
Hello. Just want to tell you a story about my parents, who were quite lusty farmers. And my father is still alive at almost 98, and my mother passed at 95. And she would comment when I asked my mother, with all the hard work of clearing land and plowing and planting with horses, how did they have time for such activity? She would reply, "Well, we had to rest the horses."
You know, that's something that we overlook, is the fact that when we farmed with horses, we weren't in such a hurry. Today, when you jump on the tractor, you look to the big field to be plowed, and you're all anxious about getting it done that day. And if you're plowing with horses, for example, when you get to, if it's a warm day, you get to the end of the field, and the horses need a rest. And sometimes your
name. And they took a rest,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. And I was going to say that it's a very sociable time, too, because across the fence, the neighbor might be plowing. And so you lean on
I don't think in Oconee County at that time they were pretty isolated.
They didn't have any neighbors.
Oh, great, yeah. Story. So
thank
they had
you.
A little siesta.
Okay.
Thanks,
you.
Rachel. Thanks a lot for calling. By the way, before I forget about it, you are, and we'll be taking more calls here, certainly. Steve in Evansville's up next, but you have some upcoming book signings I sure wanted to mention.
Yeah, I can run quickly down the list. I have several coming up on Saturday, July 10th, from 10:30 to 2:30. I will be at Bramble Books in Viroqua, And they have a new location now at 213 South Main Street in Viroqua. So that's Saturday, July 10, 10:30 to 2:30. Then on Tuesday, July 13, at 7 o'clock in the evening, I'm at the Patterson Memorial Library in Wild Rose. And that's going to be the Central Wisconsin launch for the book. I launch all my books there from Central Wisconsin. That's my hometown. And then on Thursday, the 29th of July, at 7 o'clock in the evening, I will be at Brown Street Books in Rhinelander signing books. And then skipping ahead a little bit, Saturday and Sunday, September 18 and 19, I will be at Creekside Books in Cedarburg, noon to 3 o'clock each day. So there's something on the 10th of July, 13th of July, 29th of July, and the 18th and 19th of September.
And there'll probably be more coming in. You've got your website.
Yeah, and one way to keep up with what I'm doing and where I'm doing it is to look at my website, which is just jerryapps.com, and click on my blog. I write a weekly blog. Anybody can sign up for that as well. But the blog lists where I'm going to be.
Perfect. Steve in Evansville, we go to you now. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Larry. Hey, I saw a site out toward Lancaster about a month ago. I was driving on Highway 18. It was a big traffic, you know, backed up, and I figured, well, there must be an Amish rig up front here. And so I finally got up there, and here's a kid. He must have been not more than 14 or 15 years old, on the riding a plow that had 5-foot diameter steel wheels, and he had 7 of the biggest mules that I've ever seen in my life. And I asked some friends that know horses about that, and he said, well, they must have been Percheron mules because they were as big as Percherons, but their ears just poked straight up in the air. So I didn't realize that they made mules that big. Do you have any? And there were 7 of them, 4 abreast and 3 behind. And this kid was standing up on his plow, just driving those things right down the middle of Highway 18. It was an incredible sight.
Well, first off, it's certainly enough to stop traffic. I would want to see that, too. I have a little bit, not very much, in my book about mules. That's a cross between a horse and a donkey.
Donkey, right?
Yeah. There, to tell you the truth, there are not very many mules in Wisconsin. So that would be a rarity. We've never had very many mules. More often, we would find them in the South, states like Missouri and Tennessee and so on. So that indeed is a rarity, and I must say I would stop and look at that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Steve, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Roy in Iron City, we'll get to you now. Hi, Roy.
I ain't calling you early, so to speak. When I was a young fella, I went through every phase of horse farming you could imagine. But my best experience was with 2 horses, Belgians that weighed about a ton apiece. And I was probably 10 years old. And the biggest job I had was trying to hang on to the horses. And all they had to do to pull was to lean. So one day this farmer decided the plow he was using was too heavy. So he went to an auction and bought a plow. Would you believe them 2 horses straightened out the beam on that plow? And that's the story I have for you today.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, what a lot of people don't realize that draft horses are big.
Yeah.
They indeed will weigh a ton and more. And the carriage horses and riding horses are oftentimes half that size, 1,200, 14,000 pounds. So, these big horses had a lot of power and a lot of strength. And I thought you were also going to tell me about not only was it sometimes a challenge for a kid to drive these big horses, but to put a harness on a horse of that size. That's one thing I have never forgotten. It was a real challenge for a little short kid to put a harness on one of these big horses. And these big horses just prided themselves in pushing you against the side of the stall, too.
Thanks, Roy. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, that's a good story. Leslie in Preston, Minnesota, it's your turn next. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, guys. Jerry, I was just wondering if you have a section in your book about the Amish farming.
I do, but not a large section.
I just had to tell you this
because
little story.
Because that's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I just saw some Amish kids this winter. They just have a heyday with their horses. They'll have their buggy up on the road and a rope, and they're on skis in the ditch. So they're doing their own version of water skiing.
Exactly.
Yeah, and they have so much fun.
Sure.
Oh, it's wonderful. Thanks, Leslie.
Yep.
Appreciate that call. And Bill in Rockland, on to you now. Hi, Bill.
How you doing?
Great.
Hey, I wanted to ask your guest about, the horse competition.
Horse pulling.
How horse pulling evolved. Because we have a horse pulling coming up, Father's Day.
Yeah, horse pulling is still very, very popular. I tried to trace the history of that, and the best I could do was to come up with the notion that farmers forever have been competitive about doing various kinds of things. Just as today, their tractor pulling contests. Well, they also, I think, from the very first time that we had horses, they wanted to check with their neighbors to see if their horses were better than their neighbors' horses. And so they would hook onto something and pull it. There was a lot of informal horse pulling going on. By the way, we did not have draft horses in this state, in the country, prior to 1830. So it's, in terms of history, a relatively recent occurrence. But the progression then of horse pulling contests from these informal things that farmers did, I suspect when they were threshing or doing other kinds of events, the county fairs soon became very popular places for horse pulling contests. I guess some of them still are. And then they continued on. So it has an interesting history, but I don't know the precise date when the first horse pulling contest occurred. I doubt there was such a formal date.
Hmm. Yeah, we have a contest coming up here, Father's Day, out here at La Crosse County by Middle Ridge. We usually get 15 to 20 teams,
sure,
lightweights and heavies.
Yep.
And then they have one at County Fair in La Crosse County, and they have a real good turnout.
Yeah, there's a lot of interest in that. There's, I of course would go to see wherever there's some horses, but I thought that I'm one of these old relics that would have that interest, and not very many other people would. And I'm dead wrong about that. Lots of people.
Yeah,
absolutely
people
right.
People bring their kids out there to see the big horses. You know,
they have. There's just a lot of interest in horses, and it continues.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And horses, they're a fairly smart animal too. You write about that in your book.
Yeah, I have a whole section. The question: how smart are horses? One of the stories I have in here is about a horse that when the water tank was frozen, and that's how we watered all of our cattle and horses when I was a kid. We had a water tank outside in wintertime, of course, froze solid. And we had a tank heater, but until the heater melted the ice, that there was a scum more than that, sometimes an inch or two of ice on the horse, or on the tank. Well, in the story I have, this particular horse knew enough, when it was time to get a drink, to, in a sense, rear up a bit and pound the ice, break the ice with his front hoofs. And that took a remembering of how that had happened before. And there are all kinds of stories of horses knowing how to open the latches on barn doors, doing all of that kind of thing. So horses, and most farm animals are not dumb. We tend to call them dumb animals, and they are not, especially horses. They're very smart.
They are indeed. And your book's been already has gotten a really good response here.
Excellent. In fact, the Midwest Booksellers Association up in the Twin Cities that covers all of the Midwest had selected the book as one of their what they call their Midwest pick for the month of June, which meant it was one of three or four books that they thought was outstanding. I was most flattered by that, because it's pretty much a straight history of farming and agriculture in the Midwest with a focus on horses and farm machinery. Something I'm very much interested in, but apparently others are too.
Yeah, and with lots of great photos and lots of great diagrams and some of the old ads, as you were talking about earlier, there's really beautiful photography in there.
Exactly. Again, for people who want to learn more about this and some of my other work, go to my website. It's just Jerry Apps, all one word, JerryApps.com. And just as an aside, I am not an application. I am an apps. And My name has been stolen. JerryApps.com.
All right. Jerry, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Really appreciate it. Jerry Apps, I'm sure there will be, I know we'll have him on again. If not to talk about this book, then the next one in line. He's always got something that he's working on. So we'll look forward to his next visit. Coming up tomorrow at 11, I'll be here to talk with the archaeology of Wisconsin with Tom Plager, Dean and Campus Operating Officer, Associate Professor of Anthropology and Archaeology at the UW-Baraboo Sauk County Campus. We'll also take a look at strategic investing. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.